Welcome back from Mother Russia, Scott Ritter, my dear friend and our favorite weapons inspector. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yourself?
I'm having trouble speaking, apparently. It's a little unsettling because Kevin Michalitzi was scheduled to produce today's show, but he just hasn't shown up. He is AWOL, as we say in the biz. And those of you who watched our Sunday podcast and witnessed his little temper tantrum, you may, like me, suspect that's why. I don't know. He didn't tell us. So anyway, I'm going to wing it and try my best to handle the comments. I hope our beloved audience is a little bit patient with us because it's kind of tough to talk to Scott and handle the comments all at the same time.
It's kind of tough to talk to Scott.
You said that, not me.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Thanks to Justin Lucero for designing our new virtual background there. What do you think, Scott? Did you notice?
I did notice it's got sort of this combat desert thing going.
That's right. There it is. Look at that. And we
maybe
have some.
Could help with my background.
Oh, no, yours is perfect. I really like yours. I love that yellow and the Dylan thing. Well, the Dylan thing's not showing right now. What happened to the Dylan thing? Where is it?
It's over there. Dylan's getting squeezed out. I got more stuff showing up. So
what? You demoted Bob Dylan. I don't know about that. All right. Well, everybody wants to know, what was it like in Russia on Thursday night? We're going to get into it in a little bit more detail. So tune in for that. Maybe just briefly, did you make some new friends over there in Russia?
Oh, yeah. No, this was there he is, the warlord himself. I don't want to give away the farm. Look, this was a great trip. It was more than I could have ever expected. The organizers were brilliant. Everybody who was involved was outstanding. The Russian people were as friendly as they can be, receptive to the message. You know, I think there was some concern going in that you know, the Russians might not want to, you know, even engage on the issue of better relations. And while there were many questions about it, the reception of the dialogue was outstanding. And I think I've captured this experience both in terms of my notes and also visually. We are going to be making a documentary film, Waging Peace, and starting this Thursday. On a weekly basis, I will be publishing a chapter-length narrative of the trip. I'll start off this week just explaining how the trip came to be, who the organizers were, and you know, what the mission was. And then I'll just break it down city by city. Sometimes I'll take on a particular subject theme, like sanctions or Victory Day, you know, so that'll be out on the Substack. I hope people will support it. A lot of work has gone into this. A lot of work has gone into this, and a lot of work will go into it, as well as the movie. But I think we'll discuss this in more detail starting Thursday. I think the idea would be to, you know, look, ladies and gentlemen who are watching, I'm just here to tell you right now, Waging Peace is a thing. This wasn't a, you know, oop, I'm going to Russia, vacation, done, and we're done. No, we're going to be talking about this for a long, long, long time. Maybe more than a year, because this is how important this this issue is, and this is how important this trip was. This was a monumental trip. I don't know if I can explain to an American who, I would imagine that there's been no coverage of this in the American media. None.
But we're covering it.
Besides us, yes. Yeah. You can't say that about the Russian media. This got wall-to-wall coverage. Every place I went to got
mainstream. They covered you and Vika just going into a market. Now, that's the sign of you're a celebrity when they make a big deal out of you going in to buy a Coke or something.
Yeah, this was...
What did that feel like? Like this is news in Russia.
Well, my visit was news in Russia. My visit was big news. And basically here, you know, we had gone in to just grab some stuff for the road. This is on our long drive from Volgograd to Grozny. And we stopped off in a market and bought stuff. And I think altogether the tab for everything we got was under $6. And, you know, I basically told the guy.
That was the news then, right?
Yeah, under six. I said, if I bought this in the States, probably about $30, which is about right. If I had gone in and bought the same stuff at the mini mart down here, about a $30 tab, which is what we expect. But the point is, I guess they're pointing out that, you know, purchasing power is a thing.
I don't think you're really answering my question. I mean, that's maybe the point that was made, but the very fact that they're shooting you simply buying a little something in the store, that's treating you like quite a star. What did that feel like?
Well, I can tell you that, I have sympathy for Leonardo DiCaprio now and people back, you know, because no matter where I went, I mean, literally, we are in the middle of nowhere, And a car will stop and a person will jump out and go, "You're Scott Ritter. Can I get you a picture?" You know, I mean, everywhere on the metro, just walking around town, no matter, you know, if I'm trying to go to the bathroom, you know, "You're Scott Ritter." Yep. And I'm touched by it. I mean, the fact is, this show, everybody watches it. Everybody watches any video that I'm in. They absorb everything, which is a huge burden. Not a bad burden, but I think coming out of this trip, I realized that, I mean, I've always taken speaking seriously. I've always, you know, endeavored to be very fact-based and such, but realizing the fact that literally there are millions of people out there listening to every word and paying attention to it. That's a responsibility. That's a huge responsibility. So it just makes what we do even more important and, more affirming of the mission we're on. These people were as friendly and receptive as can be. I mean, it was an eye-opening experience. Good people, good country, and we're on a good mission, Jeff. We're on a really good mission. This is an important mission.
All right, you talked me into it. We'll get into this more in detail on Thursday night. After this week, we'll be back to our usual schedule of Tuesdays and Fridays, but this week, the loquacious version will be on Thursday night. So this is the lightning round. Scott answers all questions in 3 minutes or less. Let's go to the questions from our beloved audience, starting with Charles in a little place I like to call New York City. Scott, you say you love America. I believe you. Now home reflecting about Mother Russia. Does Russia seem more like the USA we grew up in? And Charles identifies as a Vietnam veteran, 1972.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk, you know, about a simpler life and things of that nature, I guess we could idealize it. But Russia is Russia. It's completely different than the United States. I mean, the people are good people. We have very similar values. We want the same thing, you know, and that's why this mission is so important. But no, growing up in the United States is growing up in the United States. It's completely different than growing up in Russia. Russia is its own unique experience. It's and that's what makes the Russian soul. So, you know, one of the themes that we're going to be talking about is the Russian soul. What is the Russian soul? How do you define the Russian soul? And, you know, it is comprised of things that are very difficult to grasp, but they're there. They're discernible. And it is completely different than the American existence. The Russian existence is about the Russian soul, that which defines who the Russian people are. You know, America's a melting pot of nations. We don't have an American soul. I mean, the only people that could claim to have an American soul are the indigenous peoples. And we've, of course, slaughtered them and put them on reservations. Everybody else is an immigrant, you know, so we have Americans with Italian souls. We have French souls, German souls, English souls, you know, a couple Russian souls smattered in. But when you bring them all together, there's no identifying soul of an American. We have an American ideal, which is freedom, that we're continuing to try to perfect. But I think living in America in the 70s and the 60s is completely different than living in Russia today. Russia is a wonderful nation, a wonderful people. And one of the reasons why it was important to go there is to make that distinction that it is a different country. It has different values, and you're going to whip me real soon, so I got to stop talking. But I think I answered this question.
All right. Russians are allowed to buy guns, but they don't. Do you know why?
Well, you know, they sort of allowed to buy guns. There's a big process for buying guns, and the guns that they buy, you know, they can't go out and buy an AK-47. They can't go out and buy an M16. They can buy a hunting rifle. They can buy a shotgun. But there's registration process, and then there's very strict laws about using guns. You know, how many times do, you know, Americans get drunk and go out and shoot off their shotguns in the air on Christmas Eve? You do that in Russia, you lose the gun, you lose the license, you'll never get a gun again. So the Russians, they have much stricter gun laws. Plus, Russia doesn't have the same cowboy spirit that America has, you know, the frontier where everybody had to be armed to protect themselves, et cetera, et cetera. That's not part of the Russian psyche. Where Russia was protected was with organized people like the Cossacks, like the Russian military. You know, and so the concept of a well-organized, disciplined militia comes into play. You know, that's sort of, you know, where, you know, weapons belong. In America, we've somehow allowed the concept of a well-organized militia to be translated into an individual with a gun so that any American, you know, who wants one can go out and buy an assault weapon. And that's just different perspectives, different approaches.
Okay, let's move on to our next question. So far, you're successfully avoiding the whip. Nicholas from Sweden, how effective was the Ukraine attack into Russia? They tried to shape the battlefield to get Russian troop movements, but they got less than 100 meters into Russia. They didn't even get past the border station.
It's not an effective, militarily effective thing. I mean, it's caused some a stink and a stir. You know, the usual suspects, the Strelkovs, the purring cats, and the other malcontents on Telegram and elsewhere have, of course, jumped in and are screaming bloody murder about how dare this happen. Where is the Russian army? Where is this? Where is that? You know, the Russian army is in the Donbass killing Ukrainian soldiers by the bushel full. The Ukrainians did a propaganda exercise. It's tragic for the people that got caught up in this. Some innocent Russian civilians have died. But there was no deep penetration. And this the people that perpetrated the attack have been killed, wounded, captured, or driven across the border. It was a complete failure. I think the goal was to embarrass Russia. It didn't embarrass Russia. Russia's focused on keeping their eye on the target, and that target is crushing the Ukrainian military by the end of this summer.
Okay. We have a voicemail message from Anna Yerpolova in Moscow.
Hi, guys. I have a question to Scott about the Russian, United States, and Chinese love triangle. As we all know, the United States and Chinese economies are very much integrated, and these ties are obviously so important that the United States doesn't even impose any sanctions on China for cooperation and openly supporting Russia. However, at the same time, the United States declares China as the main threat, main enemy. And if this is the case, wouldn't it be more reasonable for the United States not to fight, but to ally with Russia and to form a coalition against China? Or on contrary, to create a coalition with China against Russia? So why is the United States pushing China and Russia into each other's arms? Don't you think that this conflict between the United States and China is just a fair show where a doll on the left hand fights with a doll on the right hand? In this case, what is the point of this show? Do they want to size and jointly divide Russian resources and territories, or is just one more way to siphon the resources, the billions of dollars from the United States budget into the pockets of military-industrial complex? What do you think, Scott?
Well, I think one of the big problems with U.S. policy on China is Joe Biden, who is literally a man who is incapable of making the right decision on foreign policy issues ever. You know, if you go back to his June 2021 meeting with Vladimir Putin in Geneva, You know, Joe Biden, you know, sort of in his typical fashion, answered a question that wasn't asked, meaning that he stopped to talk to the press, and then he pontificated about the advice he gave to Vladimir Putin about, you know, China, and that China's big and their economy is big and their economy is going to swallow up Russia, and that Putin would be well not to get too close to China. And remember, in 1997, this is the same Joe Biden that mocked anybody who thought for a second that he'd be pushing Russia and China together. He even, you know, how was your summer vacation? I don't even know how that factors into anything except Joe Biden's logic. But then he followed up by saying, oh, and they might even try and get close to Iran. Well, guess what, Joe? Russia and China are close. Iran is close. You brought the three of them together. And the United States is becoming increasingly isolated. I mean, Anna is right to point out that that the United States and Chinese economies are intertwined, but becoming less so. China is disentangling themselves from the United States because they are against these policies of sanctioning. They're against America's rule-based international order. China and Russia had a meeting on 4 February of 2022, where they articulated in detail, in writing and in spoken word, a new relationship that's greater than any treaty. And it is greater than any treaty because there's no limitations. They can do anything they want. And right now it has China working with Russia to, you know, bypass sanctions, to strengthen the Russian economy, and to position Russia and China as the future leaders of a multipolar world where the United States will grow increasingly isolated unless it abandons its insistence that it is the world's hegemon. There's a lot more to your question, but I think we're running out of time, so I'll leave it at that.
All right, this is the lightning round, 3 minutes or less. And by the way, we've made it a lot easier for you, our beloved audience, to submit your questions. You can now get directly to the page you need to be on by going to scottritter.us. That's scottritter.us. You can submit your questions in advance in writing, also voicemail, and we've now made it easier for voicemail. It used to be you had to sign up. We never charged you for it, but you had to register and put your email address. Now you just press one button and it's much easier. And we're going to take phone calls as well. So we can take those live. The number is 425-535-9088. So we have a few different ways for you to get your questions in. Peter from Bulgaria, what do you think about Senator Lindsey Graham saying that the best investment ever for the U.S. is that they are giving money to Ukraine to kill Russians? Is it normal for an American senator to say such things? To put it mildly, it's a satanic statement. Have Americans seen it? What do they think about it?
Well, it's not normal for an American senator to say such things, but Lindsey Graham is not a normal American senator. He's a psychopath. I've talked about him in the past, and my opinion of him hasn't changed. This is a perfumed princess. A man who knows nothing about war, combat, anything. He's a lawyer who specializes putting drunk airmen in prison. He's literally useless individual. He's a warmongering psychopath. This is a man, if you take a look at his face, you know, there's no visual record of the Wannsee conference. That's the infamous conference where the Nazis got together and planned the Holocaust, the extermination of European Jews. But you can imagine when a Nazi was talking about this, the sneer and the gnashing of the teeth and all that. All you have to do is look at Lindsey Graham's face while he's talking about Russia, and you see the same thing. You now know what the face of evil looks like. This is a man who said that Vladimir Putin should be assassinated. This is a man who believes that Ukrainians should fight to the last Ukrainian. This is literally a sick, sick, sick individual. People of South Carolina, do America a favor. Get this son of a bitch out of office before he does really more stupid things. He's an embarrassment to you. He's an embarrassment to me. He's an embarrassment to the entire country. This is the same sick, I won't say bad words, sick person who made up, participated in the manufacturing of a lie that Russia was putting a bounty out for the Taliban to kill Americans. And he was up in arms about the potential of the Russians paying the Taliban to kill Americans in Afghanistan. And now Lindsey Graham's sitting there bragging about using American dollars to kill Russians, the best investment we ever had. You're a sick person, Lindsey Graham. You know, the Russians have put an arrest warrant out you. I hope they grab you. I hope they put you in jail. I hope you find out what it's like to go through Russian justice. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, they have an arrest. Russia issued a warrant for his arrest. So Scott was saying, let's take a look at Graham's face. So, all right, we do have some clips of Graham prancing around Ukraine. Here it is.
Industrial level war crimes that have been committed against the Ukrainian people. If they are forgiven in the name of peace, you will have destroyed everything we've stood for since the end of World War II. There can be no forgiving and forgetting when it comes to Putin's war crimes. Putin has an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. I'd like to do more to help prosecute Russian war crimes. The best way to protect Taiwan and world order is for Putin to lose. And if you don't get that, I think you're missing a lot.
Now you are free.
Yes.
And we will be.
And the Russians are dying.
It's the best money we've ever spent. Thank you so much.
That's the face of evil right there. That is a son of a bitch. That is a perfume prick of a human being who, man, I just wish he was 30 years younger and I'd take him into a boxing ring and smash the living crap out of that face. He is a disgrace to human beings. He can't, he's a horrible, horrible. Hey, Lindsey Graham, you voted for a goddamn illegal invasion of Iraq, you son of a bitch. You want people to forgive illegal invasions? The Russians have every legal authority to do what they do under preemptive self-defense. You know, Lindsey, all the money that you went over there with McCain to pour into the Ukraine is to do what, you little fat prick? To what? Go to war against Russia illegally? What about the Minsk Accords, you perfume princess? You know, you wanted this war, Lindsey. You wanted this war. The blood of 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers is on your hands. You drink the blood of the Ukrainian children who died. That's how sick you are. Okay.
Scotty's on fire.
Got my blood pressure up. I hate this man with a passion, a visceral passion.
Apparently. Okay, let's move on to the next question. Oh, this is the same one.
Same
Doug
question.
From Santa Fe. Who is this fellow Boris Kagarlitsky, I guess it's pronounced? He seems to have a strong and convincing voice in trying to dissuade leftists here in the West from concluding that the special military operation is on the side of justice. Are you familiar with this person, Scott?
I am not, so we'll have to put the dreaded asterisk next to his name, and then I'll look it up.
Axel O from Finland. Will the introduction of F-16s make Russia push Ukrainians out for that 400 kilometers or 800 kilometers flight distance as the safety zone they have said? That was 80 kilometers, while M777 was the most advanced weapon they had. And before you answer that, let me just show you the next question. It's also similar. With the collective West greenlighting F-16, will these just fly from Ukraine or NATO bases? If it's the latter, how likely is it that Russia will bomb NATO bases? Article 5, World War III?
No F-16 will take off from a NATO base and fly a combat sortie into Ukraine. Okay, just understand that, people. Calm the fuck down. First of all, not a single F-16 has been allocated to Ukraine. They're talking about training some pilots. The F-16s, just listen to what, let's look at the Dutch, for instance. We're going to train the Ukrainian pilots. Yay, the brave Dutch are going to train Ukrainian pilots. But what about the F-16s? Oh no, the F-16s we have right now, they are still in their operational lifespan. But when that expires, we will put them into storage and then we will consider giving them Ukrainians. They're going to give the Ukrainians expired F-16s, people. That means old aircraft, maintenance nightmares. Any Ukrainian who flies an F-16 in combat over Ukraine will die that quick. Die that quick. The Su-27 is a better airplane than the F-16 the Ukrainians are going to get, and they're getting shot down. This is not a game changer. There is nothing going to happen that deviates the battlefield. It changes the battlefield. The F-16 is an old aircraft. The Russians have been training to fly against this aircraft forever. So no, it's not going to change the battlefield. It's a stupid decision. It's going to condemn more Ukrainians to death. It's going to, you know, complicate the war a little bit more, but the Russians have the solution to this. First of all, it's not taking them by surprise. remember, we've been talking about this for a long time. So it's not like the Russians are going, oh my God, F-16 is going to show up on the battlefield. We don't know what to do. They've got it all sorted out. When it happens, if it happens, it won't be happening for long.
All right. And if you want to read more about that, Scott actually addressed this question in his most recent article in Sputnik, and you can get to it by going to our Substack. We link to all his recent articles, and this is it. Sending F-16 to Ukraine will backfire. So we give it to you in various formats. If you want it in the written form, there's your opportunity. Our next question comes from somebody. Mike Marshall in Texas. In light of the rearrest of Gonzalo Lira, have you changed your opinion about him being an intelligence asset?
I don't discuss Gonzalo Lira. He's no significance to me. Anybody who knows the story knows that he's a man who I interviewed twice, maybe three times. He told me to, you know, straight up, and he put it on his webpage that if he disappears for more than 12 hours, to consider him to be on a list of people who have been kidnapped and killed by Ukrainian secret services. He missed an interview with George Galloway. Galloway's people called me and said, have I heard from Gonzalo Lira? I had not. There were some social media postings that indicated that he might have been taken prisoner by the SBU or even the Kraken unit, which is a sort of a death squad of the affiliate with the SBU. And so I wrote an article to try to bring attention to this. I talked about, you know, if the stories about Gonzalo Lira's demise are true, then the silence of the West is deafening and shameful. And then Gonzalo appears a couple days later and literally starts calling me out. How come you said I was dead? And I said, shut the fuck up. I'm done with Gonzalo Lira. You don't get arrested by the SBU being a pro-Russian or pro-Russian, pro-Western asset and then released and allowed to continue to do the same work unless you're working with the SBU. There might've been some restrictions on what he was doing. And he might've violated those restrictions. That's between him, the SBU, and whatever government wants to come in and intercede on his behalf. But I'm done with Gonzalo Lira.
All right, fair enough. We don't need to address that issue any further. And let's see, Alexei in Moscow, would you please share, this is an interesting question, Scott, would you please share what you did not like about Russia during your trip? Some comparisons in favor of the USA, maybe. Also, it would be great if you could share Vika's impressions, that's Scott's daughter, and how they differ from yours.
Well, you know, I wasn't going there to be to try and do a comparison between Russia and the United States. And if we do that, you know, we're getting into, you know, scorekeeping. Are there things in America that are better in Russia? Yeah, there are. But you know, there's a lot of things in Russia that are better in America. So this is a stupid game. I don't mean to be insulting Alexei, but, you know, I mean, when I landed in JFK, you know, I'm driving out of a crumbling airport onto crumbling infrastructure through a crumbling city. That's the reality of New York City today. When I land in Sheremetyevo, I'm landing in a pristine airport. I'm driving through pristine highways into a city that is pristine, built and continuing to be built. So you can't do that. Now, if you want to, you know, compare and contrast what the state of democracy in the two places, you can't do that. You know, I mean, Russia has poor tap water too. You don't want to drink the water that comes out of Russian tap water as well. That's why they have bottled water. But this is Russia. It's not my place to sit there and come up with artificial comparisons. I was trying to go there on a mission to define the Russian soul, define the Russian people. Look, I'll give Alexei an example. In Crimea, my host took me to his hometown where he grew up as a child. This is in Crimea. There's no running water. There's no sewage system. That means that you take a crap in a hole in the back. And his neighbors are there. This is in 2023, ladies and gentlemen. And people who live in villages next door to them all have running water. They all have gas. They all have everything you want. Here, these people had to put their money together to dig a well to get well water just so that they have running water to, you know, do basic cleaning and stuff like that. They don't have gas. You know, there's a gas line 500 meters away. You could tap into that and deliver gas to the homes. You can't do that. There's no canalization, which means there's no water coming to the homes. You can't flush a toilet. You know, and yet, here's the thing. Does that define Russia? Am I going to focus on that and say, aha, because this village doesn't have this because who knows? Maybe it's corruption. Maybe it's incompetency. Maybe it's a mixture of the two. That's going to define Russia. You know what defines Russia for me? Was the hostess who invited us into her home and had a huge table set up with food, the hospitality she put out there, the way she sat down and opened her family up to us and talked to us and laughed with us and shared stories with us. That's what defined me. And that's how I'm viewing Russia. I'm viewing Russia from that experience. I could have gone in with a scorecard and played the gotcha game on a whole bunch of things, just like anybody can come right now and do the gotcha game here in the United States as well. But we're not going to improve relations between Russians and Americans by saying, gotcha, I'll break that whip. We're going to improve relations between Russians and Americans by learning to define each other as human beings.
All right. You didn't answer the question about Vika's impressions.
I'll let Vika define her impressions. I mean, I'm not going to speak on behalf of Vika. She seemed to have had a very good time.
Well, we can talk about this some more on Thursday night, but after Vika did what we're about to show here, she said it was the coolest thing she's ever done in her life.
They put a fat man in a skinny man suit. That was a mistake. And Vika's looking at me going, no, I don't want to do that. Look, I'm a rock. Now watch her. Look at my face. They had to crank that wind tunnel up.
All right, we'll get into that.
To get me just to float, they had to crank that wind tunnel up. My face was.
All right. I don't know if you were listening when she said that, but she said it was the coolest thing she ever did in her life.
Well, I know what she said. I mean, the first thing she was going to say was that was the most badass thing she's ever done in her life. And I said, Vika, you're in Chechnya. Women don't speak like that. So she had to tone it down.
All right. Well, we can say badass here. On the other hand, I don't know if we can say this name because I have no idea how to say it. I think this is somebody from Belgrave. Maybe you know how to read that. What are the chances that the occupying forces of NATO will leave the Serbian province of Kosovo one day as they did from Iraq and Afghanistan?
100%. It's an unsustainable situation. I mean, you know, NATO's talking about reinforcement with another battalion, and another battalion could come in at the time when they're talking about trying to build up NATO forces going up against, Russia and all this. This is a problem. The Serbian people are fed up. I think we saw with the violence the other day, they're just not going to sit there and let NATO get away with this. Let the Coast Guard get away with this. And there's a good chance this could break out into violence. And if that happens, it's no longer a peacekeeping mission. It's a war-making mission. And I don't think Europe is ready to swallow that pill right now, especially when this is the Kosovar's fault. This is not the Serbian people's fault. This is not the Serbian government's fault. I mean, I blame the Serbian government for some weakness, lack of a spine, so to speak. But no, I don't think NATO is going to be there for forever.
Okay, let's move on to the next question, and then we'll take some questions live. Also, we can take it on the phone. Also, comments coming in on Facebook and YouTube. And here's from Rachel in Memphis. Is there a way for Americans to be able to watch Russian TV channels like Channel One and other main channels in Russia with English subtitles? For example, Russian talk shows like The Great Game, Vladimir Solovyov's talk show.
I mean, the answer is yes. Rachel, the best way to do this, and I don't know if you're already a member, join my Telegram channel, come into the chat room, and ask that question. There will be a variety of Russian moderators who are very good, and they will guide you through the process of gaining access to these channels and getting the English subtitles. A lot of this is already automated, already done. It's just a matter of clicking into the right places to to gain access to it. But your question has been asked in the chat channel several times, and I know for a fact that Russian moderators or even just informed Russian participants will gladly take you through the process of gaining access to the to any Russian language channel you want and helping you turn that into English subtitles.
Jeff in Baker, Missouri, do you think Ukraine is used as a testing ground for a future U.S. dictatorship? Z has pushed the envelope and gotten away with everything from banning religion and free speech to mass murder. The neocons see this. You can take USA, add water, shake, and you get Ukraine.
No, I disagree totally, because there's something called the Constitution of the United States. And as much as I denigrate the American court system, the court system still is there as a defender of constitutional rights. And I don't see Ukraine as being anything other than the horrific humanitarian tragedy it is. I don't believe that Victoria Nuland and any of those neocons are smart enough to come up with that kind of plan. And if they do, I wish they'd try it, because then we can put them in jail and maybe even execute them for treason. But no, I don't see Ukraine as being a training ground for the destruction of American democracy. We don't need Ukraine. We're doing a pretty good job on our own.
All right, let's take one more of the questions submitted in advance. And again, for those of you who want your questions to be considered for the next episode, go to scottritter.us. That's scottritter.us. After this one, we'll take some of the questions coming in live on Facebook and YouTube. Rama from Singapore. In the event Russia doesn't occupy or control the west of Ukraine, U.S. and NATO are still left with a fascist state the size of Texas that is strongly west and NATO aligned. This would continue to pose the same threat as today. What would Russia's strategy be to tackle this situation?
Well, we know that the Russians have articulated denazification as one of their requirements for termination of conflict. So I don't imagine Russia is going to allow a situation to exist where Banderist ideology is allowed to foster and fester in Western Ukraine, that any settlement that will be reached will be inclusive of a denazification process. If Ukraine doesn't want to voluntarily participate in this, then I think the war will continue until Russia gets what it wants. The Russians have said all along that their goals and objectives haven't changed. How Russia achieves that, I don't think even Russia knows specifically how that's going to happen. A lot of it depends on, you know, when Ukraine is ready to make a deal. You know, I think that if Ukraine continues in its current posture, they put Odessa, Kharkiv, Sumy, and Dnipropetrovsk at risk of being occupied and permanently absorbed by Russia. And now we're talking 50% of the Ukrainian nation gone forever. So I at some point in time, this is an unsustainable situation. Politically, it's difficult. Zelensky's not even going home right now. Think about that. Or maybe he is home now. I don't know. I have to check. Where did Graham talk to him?
I think that was in Ukraine.
In Ukraine. Okay. So maybe he's back, but he's been gone a long time. The army is dying daily. The Russians dominate every aspect of this battle. The Ukrainian counteroffensive, it can't even get off the ground right now. So, this war is not going well. And at some point in time, Zelensky will have to make a political decision, because the West isn't going to fund a losing proposition forever. There's already a lot of pressure on him to come up to a peace treaty. When it becomes obvious that he's going to lose territory, that'll be a political, suicide for him. So I think the Russians have this under control. It's not going to be easy. I don't want to pretend that it's going to be easy. There's no guaranteed outcomes, but I think the Russians are smart enough to know what they've said. They're smart enough to know what they want, and they're smart enough to know that they need a plan on how to get there. The fact that they don't articulate in a fashion that we know this just means that they don't really care what we know or don't know, because at the end of the day, we're not decision makers. They are.
Okay. Let's take some live questions. And again, we don't have Kevin curating these questions backstage as per usual. I'm just doing this myself, so bear with me. One of our favorites, Valley. She's a regular. Hi, Valley. Always a pleasure. Is it possible you would ever consider running for president? Oh, boy. Here we go.
No. I mean, first of all, the shenanigans that have been done to my reputation make it impossible. Not legally. I mean, there's no requirement there's no banning, but that would be an uphill battle. Plus, I don't want it. I had an opportunity to run for Congress, a guaranteed seat. Had I said, yes, I want to do this, I would have been Congressman Scott Ritter. Might even be Senator Scott Ritter today, and might even be talking about a potential presidency for Scott Ritter. Not what I want. Washington, D.C. disgusts me. It's a corrupting process. I think people that get involved in it get tainted right off the bat. With that process, I'm 61 years old. I'm going to be 62 very soon. I'm not getting any younger. And I think what I'm doing right now is the most important work. I think what Jeff and I are doing in terms of waging peace, this project we have to bring Russians and Americans together to prevent a nuclear war, is more important than anything I could ever do by throwing my hat into the political ring.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of different ways to impart influence, exert influence, I guess would be the word.
Yeah, citizenship is defined in a multiplicity of ways. Good citizenship.
Yes. Let's see what else we have here. Terry Barnes, thank you for the donation. Thanks to everybody for their monetary donations and for tuning in. We appreciate it. Any opinions on the recent border clash between Iran and the IEA? It seems like it's being blown out of proportion by the Western media.
Yeah, I think when he says IEA, I think he's talking about the Taliban, the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Yeah, it's been blown out of proportion. Look, some people died. There was fighting, but it's not the first time. They've had clashes like this before. There's ongoing problems with border control, customs, things of that nature. And, there's also a history of animosity between the Taliban and Iran. So, this is unfortunately one of those things that happened. But I remember when the story first came out, the Taliban declare war on Iran. I'm like, really? Oh, that would be fascinating. But they didn't. There's no war. They're going to solve this problem. You're right. It's been blown out of proportion by the mainstream media.
Okay. I'm just looking for some more questions. Did we do this one? What do you speculate was the Ukrainian decision, the decision-making center that was hit?
I think they said it was the Ukrainian intelligence service. That's what I think it is. So if you want speculation, there it is. That's my speculation. The Ukrainian intelligence service headquarters was the decision-making center that was hit.
Okay, let's see if we can find some more questions. What about the general in Ukraine who has been missing? Is he still running the show?
I think they're talking about General Zaluzhny. Sometime in early May, he was visiting the front lines, and the facility that he was in, I think it was in the Kherson region, was struck by a Russian missile. Several people were killed, and it was rumored that he was seriously injured. Since that time, he has made appearances. There's speculation that he took shrapnel in the head, and that there were some procedures done where they had to remove pieces of the brain to prevent the swelling. And that might explain why he was out of the picture for a while. That's a debilitating injury. It's hard to imagine that he's still calling the shots, but I think for propaganda and national security reasons, the Ukrainians aren't giving us the full scope and scale on what happened.
Okay. This question comes from Jamie Hidalgo. Don't know if anyone has asked, but what is Scott's opinion on the Marines attacked on Memorial Day in California?
Don't know anything about it.
For or against attacking the Marines? Just kidding. Okay, let's...
Always against attacking Marines.
I know, a little lighthearted quip. Let's see if we can find a couple more questions before we wrap it up. How is the weather in Russia, counteroffensive-wise?
Well, depends where you are. But from the when I was in Sevastopol, it was still rainy. And I would imagine that the further north you get, there was still rain. But the sun was coming out, and you know, it's like that old song. Up came the sun and dried up all the rain, and the itsy-bitsy Ukrainian counteroffensive was off to run again. You know, as the weather improves, the ground improves, and then the Ukrainians will not be able to use a lack of mobility as an excuse. But that's not what's hampering the counteroffensive. What's hampering the counteroffensive is that anytime they bring together any you know, concentration of forces, it's immediately hit by Russian air power and Russian missiles and Russian artillery. The Russians have battlefield superiority and firepower superiority, and the Ukrainians just aren't able to generate the kind of mass necessary to carry out a concerted offensive operation against Russia.
How is the morale of the middle class where you visited? Was there any open animosity to you due to your U.S. citizenship?
The morale of the Russian people in general was fantastic. This is a nation united. You know, again, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but I don't care.
We like trouble.
Russia, you know, 200, 300, 400,000, who knows what the numbers are. You know, Russians fled Russia because of the special military operation. And I think the attitude of most Russians is good riddance. They just got rid of the weakest element of their society. They got rid of mainly Navalny supporters, people who were a cancer to Russia, and they're gone. The Russians that remain, it doesn't mean that they're blind, faithfully supporting Vladimir Putin. No, but they support Russia. They believe in Russia. You know, the people that fled don't believe in Russia. They believe in something that the West wants to define as Russia. They believe in a Western narrative of Russia, but they don't believe in Russia, because if they believed in Russia, they wouldn't buy any of the crap that Navalny's trying to peddle. There are two Russias. There is the big city Russia, Moscow, St. Petersburg, maybe Yekaterinburg, maybe Novosibirsk could be thrown in there, a handful of other cities. And there you have a sort of a political economic elite residing that are somewhat disengaged from the pulse of the nation, so to speak. They're into the money, money, money. We're making money. We're living a good lifestyle business. You know, the rest of Russia is in the business of being Russian. And I have to tell you, you go to these train stations, and I did the classic planes, trains, and automobile tour of Russia. We did it all. And I stopped at one train station, and an entire car was full of guys heading to the front. They were either going as part of Wagner or people volunteering for various the volunteer units. These are, you know, one was a 51-year-old former Russian Marine who just said, you know, I can't sit at home while this war is going on. And he found a way to volunteer and get in there. When we landed in Kazan, there are train loads of Kazan, you know, boys heading to the war, and the whole, their families were out there giving them the big hoorah on the, you know, sending them off. Russia is alive. Russia is well. Russia is populated by people who believe in Russia, who have faith in Russia, who define the Russian soul. And that's a point that has to be driven home. I think there's a lot of people that think out there that Russia is full of a lethargic, apathetic population that is ignorant and not aware of what's going on. These guys know exactly what's going on. They know, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of their government. They're not all happy with, you know, they like Putin. They recognize that Putin has saved Russia, that Putin is the savior of Russia, but they're not happy with the people around Putin. They recognize things about them that they don't like. They would like to see things different. But if you ask them to choose between supporting, you know, an inadequate Putin government or supporting the collective West, they're going to rally around Putin. That's why he has unbelievable levels of support. The Russians are for Putin. The Russians are for Russia.
Alexandra Wolf, who's watching on YouTube, asks, what would be an adequate response to the latest attacks on Moscow?
Take out a decision-making center and continue to slaughter Ukrainian troops on the front line until the Ukrainian army collapses and the war ends.
Roger Codger, what is the blue print banner over your right shoulder? It might be left to the way people are watching on their monitors, but anyway.
That is Football Club Ahmat. They are a professional football club, plays in the Russian Premier League equivalent, the Ahmat team out of Grozny. And while we were there, we were guests. We were invited to watch them play the team from Khimki, which is a Moscow suburb, and they won the game 3-0. It was a thrilling match. But I was their guest. They honored me with not just the scarf, but the coin of their founder, Ahmat Kadyrov, the first president. He was assassinated in 2004. His son Ramzan Kadyrov has taken over since then. People can criticize them all they want. Just go take a look at a photograph of 2002, what Grozny looked like, the most destroyed city in the world at that time, and walk through the city that I experienced when I was there just a week ago. And you'll understand that there is no criticism. Chechnya is thriving. The people are healthy, wealthy, and wise. They're at peace. You showed a video earlier of me walking around a facility, not just where we got to do shooting and stuff, but I was given the honor and privilege of inspecting the presidential guard for Ramzan Kadyrov, and they introduced me to these guys. These were the veterans of Mariupol, the people who captured Mariupol, and they're heroes. And it's one thing that I'll be talking about. When we talk about Russia, you got to understand it's 150 plus different ethnic groups and linguistic groups and a large Muslim population. And the Christians and the Muslims and in the Russian Federation get along just fine.
All right, let's do one more question. This is from Truth Hopeful Seeker, something like that, watching on YouTube. You being a book author and a well-known one who has returned to Russia with a bit of a cold, apparently, have you had a chance to meet other book authors from Russia within Russia?
I got more than a chance. I met with the Writers Union in Moscow. So that was an honor. Somewhere I have a statue of Pushkin that they gave me to commemorate that the visit. But it was the Writers Union. I got to meet with the writers. And then everywhere I went in Russia, other authors came up. I was given a fantastic tour of Lake Baikal by a guy who wrote the book on the Irkutsk American Company. He back when Alaska was part of Russia, he wrote a book. He did an expedition that went from Lake Baikal to Alaska down to Sitka, and he wrote a great book about this. So I got to meet him. I'm going to try and help him get his book published in the English language. It's a wonderful book. I think Americans would benefit by reading it. It's just a fantastic story of this expedition to capture this moment in time and to improve relations between Russians and Americans. It's right up our alley, Jeff. So that said, okay, so what's the next question?
All right, let's get one more in here. This is a good one. I think the most abusive insult made against Russia from the West, especially from America, was to claim that Putin is a war criminal. Americans showed their true colors in saying this. What are your thoughts, Mr. Ritter?
Vladimir Putin could not be charged under any jurisdiction as a war criminal. He has not committed a war crime. People are trying to say that he, as the leader of Russia, that the special military operation was an illegal act of aggression. I've written about this. I will continue to write about this, and I will continue to speak about this. It was a complete justifiable action under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, under the doctrine of preemptive self-defense. And Russia is able to articulate a clearly cognizable case for this, far more cognizable than the case made by the United States to illegally invade Iraq in 2003. George W. Bush is a war criminal. Barack Obama is a war criminal. We can just go to Bill Clinton as a war criminal. These are people that if they were ever taken before a jurisdiction of competence, you know, and they can't because the United States won't join these jurisdictions. But if they ever were, there, it's a slam dunk case against them as war criminals, as participating in the gravest war crime of all, which is a war of aggression from which all other war crimes come from. Vladimir Putin has not carried out a war of aggression, so it's a singular insult to accuse him of doing such. But, you know, they're not even, the International Criminal Court didn't even do that. What they've done is they've accused him of kidnapping children. I want these people who, anybody who believes this is the case, to understand that when this war started, there were hundreds, thousands of Ukrainian children abandoned in the war zone, orphans, many of them. And what the Russians did is take them under their protection. They evacuated them from danger and sent them into camps. The camps are pioneer camps. They're camps that are designed to receive children and to give children healthy things to do, to take care of children, feed children, provide housing for children. And they closed them down for Russian children so that these Ukrainian children would have a place to stay. And then the Russians have sought to find the lawful guardians of these people. You don't kidnap kids, treat them the way the Russians are treating. And then when people show up and say, that's my child, turn them over to the children, healthy, wealthy, and wise. Vladimir Putin isn't a war criminal. He deserves a goddamn medal from the international community for saving these children. It's the sign of the despicable nature of the International Criminal Court, the United States, Europe, and NATO, that they allow this perversion of justice to take place. The Russians are right to put Khan, the prosecutor from ICC, under a warrant for his arrest. He is a criminal. He is a criminal. He's somebody who's using international law for political purposes. He is falsely accused, a head of state, of a crime that wasn't confused. And what's interesting is he's destroying the ICC in the process. That's half the problem with these egomaniacs, these narcissists who get promoted to these positions and think that suddenly they are people who are law unto themselves. South Africa said that they're not going to enforce. In fact, South Africa may withdraw from the ICC, and I think you're going to see a lot of other nations do. This is the end of the ICC.
All right, Scott. I see we have a phone call. Dare we try this? Should we give it a shot? See if it works?
Give it a shot.
All right. Hello, caller. Are you there? Are you there?
Kaldal from Greece.
Kaldal. Hello, Kaldal.
What's on your mind, Kaldal?
Hi. Yes, I am. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. We're anxiously awaiting you to say something. Get to it, Kaldal. Come on, baby. Kaldal.
I think there's a lag.
All right. Are you still there, Kaldal? Oh, maybe she's not hearing us. Maybe that was the problem. Oh, Faith.
You mean we're the problem? We're the problem?
I don't know, but I don't hear her anymore.
Well, that's too bad, because Kaldal is a great person. She's been very supportive.
All right. One more before we wind it up. Are you there, Kaldal? We'll give it one more shot. Are you there? No. Nope. I don't know what happened. All right, Kaldal, send us an email. We'll figure it out. We'll try to get you on next time. All right, Scott. Let's see. What else? Before we say goodbye, let's remind folks that they can get one of these handsome t-shirts, the Ask the Inspector t-shirts, modeled by the very hunky Ryan Milton. And also, what about the books? Are you out of stock on the books?
I got the books, and they're going to be going in the mail this week.
Okay, great. So you can get books autographed by Scott. So we'll catch up to everybody who's still waiting on their books. Thank you for your patience. Although some of you weren't patient. I don't blame you, though. And Thursday night, we'll be on again. While Scott was away, we launched a new show called Strange Bedfellows. And the last of the Friday night slots to be taken by them will be this Friday night, June 2nd. And the guest is Lisa Pease. And we'll be on Ask the Inspector Thursday night. And then next week, we get back to our regular schedule every Tuesday and Friday. All right, Scott, great to see you. Take care of that cold. I hope you're feeling okay. Sometimes it's just the way you sound. Other times it's draining you. Are you feeling wiped out, or it's just affecting your voice a little bit?
I'm feeling fine.
You're feeling fine. All right. That's good. Well, great to see you. We all missed you. We're so happy you made it back safely. And thanks for spending some time with us. And we'll see you Thursday night.